Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:46 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 10th, so we're still in summertime for just a little while longer. And I'm kicking off today showing you the platinum and palladium ratio. So it got down to just below parity in here today. And that is something that we don't see particularly often. This chart goes back to 1986, and there have really only been two occasions where we've seen this, right now and all the way back in the year 2000 through to the beginning of 2001. We got down to this ratio as well. Of course, back then prices weren't nearly as high as they are today, but what we can certainly see is that these two metals have been going in the exact opposite directions for much of the last year, which has contributed to this contraction in the ratio. So palladium prices have been rallying, and rallying in a pretty consistent manner. They pulled back from $1,000 to $900 in a reasonably sharp manner, but we've seen some support being found more recently, and the progression of higher reaction lows remains intact. When we look at it on a weekly basis, we can see that it's been a reasonably choppy uptrend. There have been occasions when it has been somewhat overextended relative to the trend mean, and certainly the pace of the advance has picked up over the last 3 or 4 months as it has broken out and then gone right up to test that psychological $1,000 level. But when we look at it the other way around and look at platinum prices, they are back testing that $900 area, and that is the lower side of the range being in evidence since the beginning of the year. But prices are a shade of where they were back in 2009. I think that this continues to look like a process of base formation development, that we've had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Now we're getting this period of right hand extension, and quite often these times when a type 2 bottom gives way to a ranging phase can be quite lengthy. But $1,000 is now a rather psychological level, but platinum is at 935. It's bouncing from the lower side of the range, and with that, with the fact that platinum and palladium now are trading at exactly the same price, there has to be at least some consideration about just how low platinum prices are. Then if we look at, for example, silver, it is often described as high beta gold. It was up 20 cents in here today. This is the third consecutive day on the upside, and all have been in a reasonably dynamic manner. And most particularly, we had that big outside day 3 days ago. And that is contributing now to an unwinding of the short-term oversold condition and pushing the price back above the trend mean. Of course, because we're in this largely range-bound environment, the trend mean doesn't mean an awful lot. Perhaps more important is the fact that it has found now a higher reaction low, and that is the first higher reaction low following, I think, a major higher reaction low that we've seen in at least this year. So as long as it can hold the low that we saw back on Friday, then we can probably conclude that this is a reasonably benign environment, and that the most likely scenario is for higher to lateral ranging. And I talked yesterday in the video and audio about the fact that gold hadn't been able to sustain a move for more than two consecutive days. Well, this is a third consecutive day on the upside, and while it was not able to hold the advance all the way through the end of the day, what it does suggest is at least a pause in this downtrend. And if the consistency of the moves that we've seen all of this year in terms of the unrequiting bearishness during these pullbacks, then three consecutive days in the upside suggests that a low of at least near-term significance has been found, and that as long as it holds, we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional higher to lateral ranging. So I think that maybe we can begin to conclude that the precious metals are beginning to turn the corner. And it was a reasonably positive day on oil prices as well, with Brent crude up about $0.75 and beginning to exhibit at least a pause and at support building around this $55 area. Now, what I found quite interesting was, let me just pull this page over. It is just a a story from the Wall Street Journal. It's Anatomy of a Stock Market Crash. And above that, it's Is Another Black Friday Stock Crash Imminent? Next to that, What Will Cause the Next Financial Crisis by JP Morgan. Now, these are all obviously worthy questions, but I am particularly interested in the fact that they're being asked so regularly at the moment that we have this broad expectation that there is going to be a financial Armageddon around the corner. And I'm rather curious as to why. And if we start to think about how do other people view the market, well, perhaps the biggest unknown is what is the Fed's and what Jeff Gundlach terms quantitative tightening, or the runoff of the Fed's balance sheet going to represent. That is, in fact, the largest question. But when we look at the S&P 500, the worst that we can say is that it is somewhat overbought relative to the trend mean. Could it pull back in a somewhat dynamic manner, similar to what we saw in March or what we saw in August? And the answer is absolutely yes. But so far, pullbacks within the context of what has been a very benign environment just about all year have been limited to between about 50 and 80 points. And if we had a Let's, for example, say an 80-point pullback from current levels, it would take us back towards the upper side of the underlying range and perhaps dip a little bit into it as well. That would unwind most of the overbought condition, but it would really require a pullback of more than that to begin to suggest that this is anything other than a reasonably consistent advance that remains in motion. And the Nasdaq, having spent much of the last 4 months doing not much of anything, did also move to a new high, and it isn't nearly as overextended as the S&P 500. And the Russell 2000 index has continued to push above this 1500 area. That is now somewhat overextended relative to the trend mean, and again, there is the potential that we get a little bit of pause and consolidation. But as long as it is trading to the right of the trend mean, or in the absence of a clear downward dynamic, and I think not just a downward dynamic, but rather a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, then we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And when we look around the world, and indeed, if we were to click through the constituents of the autonomies, for example, which I think are a reasonable barometer for the global economy, then what we have plenty of evidence of is an increasing number of shares that are finding support in the region of their trend means and rallying or breaking out to new high ground. And for example, I think Google is one of the most consistent trends out there at present. That if we look at the simple consistency of this market, where it has paused in the region of psychological levels, 600, 700, 800, not so much at 900, but then at 1,000, that pullbacks have been relatively similar sized, all in the region of about $100, and the most recent one was a little bit less than that. It is now right in the region of this $1,000 level once more, but it's going to be as plain as day when this chart is no longer consistent, that reactions will become greater than $100, that when it rallies, it will rally considerably more than $100 increments, and it will start to, or the, or potentially it would either accelerate or start going sideways for much longer. But even then, just like we saw in 2014 or 2015, that as long as the size of the reaction is relatively similar, then I don't think there's going to be a lot of people who are particularly worried about it. And what we can also see is, for example, that Amazon had paused in the region of $1,000 and it hasn't quite been able to surmount it just yet. But that relatively lengthy pause, which has gone on now for most, or at least half of the last year, then it has completed a reversion to the mean. And there weren't many people thought that that was possible back at the peak in July. So Now, the question is it going to hold? Are the lows going to hold around $925, and will it push through and on again to a th above $1,000? And when we look at the banking sectors, then this also remains a reasonably benign environment. They spent most of the year ranging and are breaking upwards to new high ground. Now, of course, we have also in here today had the Catalonians beginning to pull back from an outright claim of independence. And of course, time really is very much of the issue because there is the real risk of capital flight. So they are realists. They know that they're going to have a difficult time of it if they do go it alone, at least in the short term. And it is a large question whether they quite have the appetite for it, and whether if there was more than a 40% turnout, whether they could have in fact achieved their independence vote. So there are a large number of outstanding questions, but the big broad question about it all is what is the ECB going to do about monetary policy? And as long as the ECB is increasing the size of its balance sheet and we still have very low interest rates in the Eurozone, and that they're making abundant liquidity available both to the financial sector and to governments, then there isn't a lot to really act as a headwind for the European economy and for the European stock markets. So when we look at, for example, that Euro Stoxx index, not on the weekly but on a monthly basis, we can see that it has ample potential to play catch up, and then only and even then it would only be up to the upper side of its range if it were to get up to 450. Whereas we have seen a considerable number of globally oriented indices breaking up and out of really quite lengthy ranges. And the FTSE 100 is back testing its highs, and it continues to look like an index that has got ample potential for additional upside. We can also look at Japan. There is an increasingly loud argument that Japan is trading on a price-to-book discount to just about everything else, that it has these tailwinds from the central bank and the pension fund buying ETFs, that an increasingly large proportion of the stock market is owned by the government in one way, shape, or form. And but more importantly, what we have evidence of, particularly since the middle of 2016, is a progression of higher reaction lows, support being found in the region of the trend mean. It's back testing the peak from 2015, and it is above this psychological 20,000 level for what is only the second time in what is an awfully long time. And if the Nikkei can push on to new recovery highs and, more importantly, sustain the move above 20,000, then we have a rational argument that this is a new secular bull market for Japan, which isn't something that anyone would have given credence to, for long at least, in much of the last 20 years. But if we see base formation development and completion in Japan, then there is no other conclusion that we can draw. And against that background, I think it is still important to continue to keep an eye on the yen, which, and the dollar has been holding the majority of its advance against the yen, and it was able to rally off its lows in here today. If it can break above 115, then that would break the downward bias for the year, and it would act as, I think, really quite a significant bullish catalyst for Japanese stocks. And the second section index, which is so often a leader for the Japanese index, continues to push on to new high ground, and it has an almost monochromatic tone to that weekly chart, but it has very clearly been able to hold this progression of higher reaction lows. And as long as it is doing that, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. China is in lockdown ahead of the Party Congress in a couple of weeks, and obviously yesterday having been closed for a week, and the reserve requirements for the banks having been slashed while everything was closed. We had this big move, but it has held the majority of the advance in here today and rallied well off its lows as well. I suspect that it is quite unlikely that we're going to see a big decline in Chinese stocks before the end of this month. And when we look at the broad commodity complex, then the continuous commodity index is back above 400, and it is now pushing back above the trend mean. And this continues to look like a recovery scenario. Having spent most of the year trending lower, we're getting increasing evidence that the commodity complex is beginning to turn around. And the Baltic Dry Index, which has been moribund for what must feel like an awfully long time, has been firming and has had an upward bias since the beginning of 2016, and now it is finding support again above the trend mean. It is looking increasingly likely that this is also back in a demand-dominated footing. And of course, part of the reason that it did so very badly was because there were so many new ships. But we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, and that is being abundantly clear from the performance of stock markets. It is also helping to add or lend some support to the commodity complex, and the industrial metals in particular have been making the running in terms of the commodity complex, and continue to demonstrate a period of demand dominance. The fact that the banking sectors are by and large relatively steady and certainly doing better. For example, Citigroup, which has really been out in the cold for what must feel like a long time, has been outperforming in here for most of the last 18 months. And I think it really is worth looking at it on a 10-year basis just to demonstrate how lengthy a base formation can be, and that it is breaking up out of that base formation. So we can at least begin to consider that this is a much more benign environment for banking sectors, and of course that also contributes to this attitude that we are in a synchronized period of global economic expansion. And I regard biotech as representative of the cyclical nature of the technology sector. I don't think it's correct to really look to companies that have adopted subscription models as indicative of the cyclicality of the technology sector any longer. But biotechnology certainly fits that category, and it is also on a recovery trajectory. And when you put the commonality of those three sectors together, they represent the outperformance of cyclicals in the latter stages of a bull market. So I don't think that we're there yet. I don't think that they have outperformed by nearly enough. And we don't have any of the other indications of a recession that are flashing red. So I think that we are at the in the early stages of the end of a cyclical bull market, but still in the early stages of a secular bull market. And I think that is perhaps the most important point, that we have been conditioned to expect crashes. We had a crash in 2000, we had a crash in 2007 and 8, and we're seeing increasing number of analysts making sure that they're putting down a marker that there's going to be another crash, and that and warning about what it is and what it could what could lead from it. But if this is indeed a secular bull market, then we do not necessarily have to have a crash. That doesn't mean that stock markets can't pull back violently, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to give up all of the advance that we have seen since 2009, because that is what a crash would mean, and I don't believe that that is necessarily the case. So I think that we will eventually have a recession. It will provide wonderful buying opportunities within the context of a secular bull market that has decades left to run. But the big wild card is bonds. And if we just keep an eye on the 2-year yield, it is continuing to advance here, and it is now above 1.5%. So what that is beginning to price in is that we're going to have interest rate hikes, and that we might have a couple next year in addition to an additional one this year. And that is something that the bond market was not willing to countenance until quite recently. And that would certainly represent a change. So if that is indeed the case, then the total return on bonds is perhaps the most important chart in the world, because it has done nothing but go up for what must feel like an awfully long time, and it is now in the region of the trend mean. If it fails at this level, then we are potentially in a type 3 top formation development phase, and a sustained move below 2000 would complete the top and suggest that the secular advance in bonds is indeed over. So it is, I think, certainly a do or die moment for the bond market. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.